Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson, and I am delighted to have back with us somebody that we regard highly. His name is Daniel Street. By the way, the first part about Daniel is really the important part. He's a hunter. He's a gun owner. He's a fisherman. And he's a believer. By the way, on the fishing scene, is it bass or trout?
Mostly bass. And I'm sorry, mostly trout, but I do bass fish. But I'm a fly fisherman.
Okay.
So I don't do a whole lot of bass fishing.
Okay, so that separates you right there. Come to Southern Oregon, and we'll take you steelhead fishing. You ever caught a steelhead?
I have not. And it's on the bucket list.
Okay, well, let's make that happen. In the meantime, he's an attorney. He has over 2 decades of experience handling civil litigation, state and federal court there in Louisiana. He's authored a 3-volume series entitled Fake News Exposed about Trump, Fake News Exposed. And he's got a lot going on. You can check out his website, DanielRStreet.com. And there's a picture of his website. Well, Daniel, good to see you. Thanks for your time, friend. I wish we could talk about this, but because it deals with Trump, we kind of get all, everybody gets emotional. But let's deal with the legal part of it. What we're seeing in New York, it appears to be judicial malpractice. Is that being too simplistic?
Well, that's a good characterization of it. I feel the same way. It's definitely just an unprecedented attack on, in my view, on the rule of law, and it's an abuse of process. It's an abuse of the prosecutorial discretion. And I've kept up with the Manhattan case as much as I possibly can from the start. And I will tell you that that this judge has done literally anything he can to undermine the ability of President Trump and his team to defend the case. So it's atrocious.
Let me skip ahead and come back. Is it appealable in the end?
Yes.
Okay. So let's come back to, can anything be done now when everybody, including yourself, Alan Dershowitz and big known lawyers are saying, this is crazy. Why is this case even going forward? Can anything be done now or is it too late?
Well, the problem you run into is that the review by a higher court of rulings that are, we in the law, are called interlocutory rulings. Those are rulings that are not final. They don't dispose of a case. In a criminal matter, a review of that by the Court of Appeal during the case before a final judgment's been entered is very limited. And that's the problem that the Trump legal team is running into. They keep losing everything they try in front of the judge. And the efforts they've made to take those issues up to the Court of Appeal have gotten them nowhere thus far. So they just haven't been able to get rulings on the merits of these various different decisions by the trial judge from the Court of Appeal. And that's the problem. It happens in every criminal case. And it's I would like to see some changes to procedure throughout the country to allow higher courts to intervene more readily in criminal cases, because you can see what kind of abuses the district courts get away with. This case is a good illustration of that.
Okay, one other question before I get into the meat of it. Why couldn't there, in this case, be a change of venue of something that is so obvious?
Well, President Trump's legal team tried twice to get the venue changed. The first effort failed. Then they tried again during jury selection when it was, a much better record for them, to show how unfair the process is and how difficult it is or impossible even for President Trump to get a fair trial in Manhattan. You know, I've done this for 27 and a half years. I've never even heard of half the panel, half the people brought in at the very start when the judge asked them if they could be fair. Half of them said no. People always say they can be fair. Nobody ever wants to admit they can't be fair. So that is just incredible data. And President Trump's team tried again. And from what I understand, they took that up to the Court of Appeal last week, trying to get, once again, an interlocutory ruling on that. and a review of that interlocutory ruling. And as far as I've been able to tell, the Court of Appeal hasn't ruled on that yet. So there's a possibility, but it's remote, that the Court of Appeal would step in and go, no, no, you can't do that here now. You have to do it somewhere else. But I wouldn't put any money on it.
Well, the bottom line, Daniel, is President Trump basically can't get a fair trial.
No. Period.
Okay, one other question on the pragmatics of it. Is the jury sequestered?
Good question. Yeah, we have an anonymous jury. I don't believe the jury's sequestered because they're anonymous in this particular case. You know, the anonymous juries usually deal with in cases involving the mafia. And in those cases, they'll have an anonymous jury and sequester the jury. I don't believe this jury's sequestered.
So they can go home and watch the evening news.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There's just so much here. I guess, what did you think of the opening argument yesterday? I listened to a little bit. I'm not an attorney. I just heard other people complaining about it. What's your 30,000-foot view of it?
Well, I'll have to quote Jonathan Turley. Jonathan Turley is one of the preeminent legal scholars in the country. He's a law professor at George Washington University. And his quote, the quote I saw him make about this as he watched the opening arguments, was that he was in utter disbelief that a court allowed this argument to be made. So the government's argument is just, I mean, when I say the government, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and keep in mind, the lawyer who did the open argument for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is the Michael Cangelano. I forget, I might be mispronouncing his name, but he's a DOJ lawyer who was sent up to Manhattan to put this case together or help put this case together for the district attorney's office in Manhattan. So this is the Biden regime's representative giving this opening argument and making just outlandish claims that have no correlation to what the actual law is. I mean, they're literally claiming that a candidate's effort to suppress adverse information about him, even if it's basically shakedowns, even if it's extortion, is somehow criminal for the person being extorted. And I'm almost at a loss for words that this is going on in a courthouse in this country.
Probably as you and I are speaking right now, the judge was supposedly going to respond to the prosecution claim of a violation of a gag order. I don't know if that news is broken yet, but how come Trump is given a gag order and the prosecution and everybody on that team isn't?
Yeah, I think that's good proof of what I've been saying about the bias and unfairness of in the manner in which the judge is handling this case. President Trump can't talk about Stormy Daniels. He can't talk about Michael Cohen. But Michael Cohen goes on MSNBC and his own podcast and just badmouths Trump from beginning to end. There's no gag order on Alvin Bragg or any of his representatives from the DA's office. When they go, they have affirmative constitutional obligation to protect the rights of the accused, and they go out and spread misinformation and we'll call them massage the facts and report their massage facts, all in violation of their ethical obligations under the New York ethical rules, and not a peep, not a word from the judge about any of that. So it is the most grotesque illustration of unfairness and violation of a criminal defendant's First Amendment rights that I've ever seen.
How did a misdemeanor go from past the statute of limitation into federal felonies? How in the world did that gap get filled?
Well, the particular statute that President Trump's being charged under in New York is falsification of business records. And there's two statutes. There's a misdemeanor and there's a felony. He's been charged under the felony statute, which requires not only to prove the underlying misdemeanor elements, but also to prove that the falsification of business records was done in furtherance of or to conceal another crime. And that's how they bootstrap the felony here to try to save the case. But even then, the statute of limitations ran on most of it. I covered all that in my Substack. The only thing that saved any of the charges, really, in my view, was some COVID suspensions signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo back during all the lockdowns. He signed some executive orders suspending the running of the statute of limitations on criminal code violations and a host of other things. And they used that to save the felony charges.
Do you think the prosecution puts Cohen and Daniels on the stand?
Oh, sure. Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay, so what are they wanting from him when he is a convicted guy with all kinds of problems? I mean, what are they going to try to extract from him, that the money was supposed to go to her?
I would assume they would use Michael Cohen to prove the basic facts that are alleged in their statement of facts. You know, they'll use Cohen to prove that, you know, he and Trump got together and talked about what they wanted to do. And then he went, and he's going to, I would expect Cohen to testify that everything he did with Stormy Daniels was in furtherance of that agreement. So
if you were cross-examining him, where would you go?
Well, I will say this. Cross-examination of Michael Cohen there's a lot of low-hanging fruit to challenge Michael Cohen's veracity. I would start with the host of lies that he told about this episode. He's got a whole host of representations made to courts, to federal regulatory agencies, made in writing, made to media, where he said in the past the exact opposite of what I anticipate he will say when he's called to testify. So he could be confronted and would be confronted with all of that. I think any lawyer that handled a case like this would confront him with that. Then his felony convictions and the entire, the problem with Michael Cohen is he's just an unsavory individual. And that's coming back on Trump now because, Trump associated with the guy. But sometimes people have lawyers like that they use who aren't as worried about what the rules are, because they'll kind of push the envelope and get some things done that somebody that's more worried about shooting straight and flying right won't do. So the prosecutors are going to try to bootstrap everything back to Trump using Cohen. No matter how sorry and no good Cohen was, he was Trump's lawyer, and he was Trump's fixer for years. So, even when Trump's legal team breaks Cohen down into pieces, which is going to happen, the prosecutors are going to come back in and just try to cast all of that onto Trump. So it's going to be a challenging situation for Trump's legal team to deal with that.
In the meantime, Daniels has said publicly, and I'm sure that could be brought to the courtroom on several occasions, no affair occurred.
That's right. She put that in writing. She said it over and over again.
So what's the money for?
Yeah.
when you got Cohen walking away with hundreds of thousands of dollars that he confiscated from the Trump organization.
Well, and look, if you go back to one of the prosecutors that resigned from the Manhattan DA's office because the charges weren't originally brought, that's Mark Pomerantz, the one who wrote a book. So talk about a poison jury pool. Mm-hmm. The guy who worked on one of the guys who worked on the prosecution before the indictment was brought, wrote a book about all their efforts to get an indictment. And they viewed, and at least for a period of time, they evaluated the whole situation with Stormy Daniels as extortion. And Pomerantz covers in his book at length about how there was no effort to try to indict Stormy Daniels for what they believed to be was extortion. They say, how can we turn charges around on Trump for paying extortion? So it's just unprecedented in the history of law, as far as I know. And President Trump's been in the crosshairs of these people for a long time.
Right.
And they would do anything and twist any legal theory and make up any kind of novel legal attack to bring charges against Trump.
I get that. I guess we have a hard time understanding that hatred. I get that. But in the meantime, what falls through the crack is the credibility and the integrity of our judicial system itself. It's just literally being run over. A couple other quick questions, Daniel, before I take a break. Is this election interference?
In my opinion, absolutely.
Okay. Then the other thing is, if the president is convicted, does an appeal stop him from going to jail, or they handcuff him in the courtroom and take him off?
Good question. This is uncharted territory in the history of this country. First of all, with respect to the charges in Manhattan brought against Trump for a person with no priors, no prior convictions, no criminal record, actual jail time would be extraordinarily unusual. So I wouldn't expect President Trump to get actual jail time. The practical matter that they would have to deal with, even if the judge was bound and determined to try to put him in jail, is his Secret Service protection. So the Secret Service is in tactical control of any room they enter. So they're not, as a practical matter, going to be able to put President Trump in a prison, I don't think. But I have to tell you, this is uncharted territory. These issues have never been addressed before, and that's just my prognostication about what will happen. I think President Trump will wind up with an ankle bracelet and home detention or something, or maybe just probation. But we'll just have to see, because that's just me looking in my crystal ball.
The House said 2 days ago, or yesterday, maybe it was yesterday, that if he is convicted, that they would remove Secret Service from him. I don't know if they have the power to do that. I thought the president does during an election cycle, but they would remove Secret Service. Is that a possibility?
Well, what happened was Representative Benny Thompson, who's a Democrat from Mississippi, he was chairman of the January 6th committee, proposed, he and six or seven other Democrats proposed some legislation that, if it became law, would deprive any president who was convicted of a felony of his Secret Service protection. So that is an effort. I keep telling people, the Democrats, I believe at least some of them, want to get President Trump killed. This is a good illustration of that. And more proof of it is Hillary Clinton comes out the next day and says President Trump wants to get people killed. So the Democrats always accuse people of what it is they actually are trying to do.
Yeah, they're good at blaming you for what they do. All right, let me take a quick break. Daniel R. Street is the .com is his website. And when we come back, we'll talk about a variety of books, a series of books that he's produced, and in particular, Fake News Exposed, 25 of the most worst media lies that are there. There's a picture of the series of the book. And again, check it out at Daniel R. Street, just like it sounds, street.com.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show, by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, and delighted to have back with us today Daniel Street. He's an attorney with over two decades of experience of handling civil litigation at state and federal courts there in Louisiana. He's written a series of books called Fake News, Exposed of the 25 Worst Media Lies. We'll talk about that. He is a hunter, a gun owner, fly fisherman, Christian, and just does a great job all the way around. We're talking to him about all kinds of things. Daniel, I know this is kind of placating you, and I don't mean to, but I think it does set up a question of fake news and what people can trust. But it's being concluded that basically one party, one ideology in this country wants to replace the Constitution, make it liquid, destroy the judicial system in the United States, destroy the nuclear family, lower the standards of education, give aid to our foreign enemies, sell agricultural land to China and overregulate farming, shut down reasonable forest management, destroy the American family, ruin San Francisco, Portland, LA, and New York, kill babies in the womb and after birth, is anti-Israel, push wokeness, DEI, CRT down our throats, defund the police, and shut down all fossil fuel usage, and gives us fake news.
Ta-da. Well said.
I know.
That's all true.
I mean, it really does boil down to that. And it comes down to one thing that has left Americans hanging. Who and what can you trust? Now, we believers, we know what the answer to that is. But in the pragmatic sense of the world, we have lost trust in just about everything. And we came through COVID, which we now find out is a huge lie. You've written a lot of books about this. Why?
Well, primarily because I think that somebody needs to hold the media accountable for their misinformation. You know, you mentioned COVID. I tell people virtually everything they heard, everything they've been told, everything they learned, that they thought they learned from government, from the medical establishment, from media about the coronavirus, about the transmissibility of the coronavirus, about the lethality of the coronavirus, about the remedies for the coronavirus, about the vaccines, using that term loosely, for the coronavirus, safe and effective, all of that. All of it was misinformation, or virtually all of it. And the medical establishment will need 30 years to recover the credibility they lost due to that misinformation. So when you go around, and particularly at the time that the book came out, where I covered the COVID misinformation, there just really weren't many people writing about it. And with respect to the misinformation about Trump that I cover in my three books, there are individual publications and journalists and websites and things that would break down individual fake news stories, but no one had compiled them. And so I said, look, this would be a great resource, and I use it. And the people, some of the people I know who purchased my books, use them as references to debunk misinformation about Trump. And so that's the primary reason why I wrote the books. I also wrote the books hoping I would sell 3 or 4 million copies and be able to retire, but that hadn't worked out for me.
When you send me a copy, I'll read it. Okay, so where can they get the books? Where can they get the series? Through your website or where?
Sure, you can go to my website. There's links to all of my books at my website. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, your audience can get my most recent book, and that's the book with the COVID stories. It's not just COVID stories, but there's stories about all sorts of things, immigration, gun control, and other things. They can get the digital version and the audio version of that book for free at my website.
All right, DanielRStreet.com. So look what's happened to news media. Look what's happened. Now, I've been in this business a long time, decades, and I follow ratings. And I've never seen our industry get split up and cut into pieces like it is now. Now, podcast has brought a whole new wave of getting informed. And what the bottom line, what we're finding out here is people will get their news from somebody they like who's saying it the way they want to hear it.
That's right. Confirmation bias.
And the problem with that is you really haven't gone anywhere. You just isolated groups into their little pockets of belief. We have lost the ability to be objective and to be, I guess, fair, if I could use that word. Whoever thought that even Fox, as popular as it is, it hasn't regained where it was. Okay, people argue that it has. It hasn't. When it lost Tucker, it lost a lot. Tucker goes out and does his thing. Okay. He says a couple of things. That splits his audience up. I'm talking to you. People and I might not like you and me. Yeah. I mean, so no. It's a crazy world. It's a crazy world.
It is. And, you know, the reality is that there's I liken it to this. That I believe there's like three basic audiences. There's the audiences whose mind is already made up. And right. those people just want to be told what they want to hear.
Right.
And that has to do with their politics primarily. Then there's people who maybe their minds aren't made up, but they're fairly well informed and they just want good information. And those are the people that I'm trying to appeal to more than anyone else, because the people who already agree with me and just want me to say what they want to hear are already in my demographic. Right. Then the people who haven't made their mind up and they just want good information is who we're trying to appeal to. And then there's the segment of people who don't want any information. They don't want to be informed about anything. And they blissfully go through life not knowing anything that's going on. And that actually might be the best way to live today. You know.
So let me ask you a question. And let me kind of just ask you to lean into a little bit from your belief system. Do you have any idea why smart people hate Trump to the point where they'll vote for somebody who's opposite of what they believe and support?
Well, I know a few people like that. You know, originally, a lot of the opposition to Trump from conservative circles was people who didn't trust him and said, look, he's been a maybe moderate to progressive Democrat all of his life. And they just didn't think he was conservative. Now, a lot of those people have come around, but there's still a few that haven't. And I will tell you that in my view, the ones that I know, and this is just not a significant statistical sample, but they buy into the misinformation about Trump. They want to believe it. And even when you dispel that misinformation, even when you show them, no, President Trump didn't tell people to drink bleach to fight COVID. President Trump didn't say that Nazis in Charlottesville were very fine people. But when you dispel all that and debunk it all, they still won't change their mind because they're so blinded by the beliefs that they've clinged to. And, you know, I think some of it has to do with his personality. President Trump's kind of a reactionary New Yorker, and he comes out swinging when people attack him. And so some of those people may have been Ted Cruz supporters, and Trump attacked Ted Cruz, or maybe they're Lisa Murkowski supporters, or maybe they were Marco Rubio supporters. And then Trump has these feuds with people, and so there's a small percentage that just aren't going to come back. And I put all of that together, and that's the best that I can come up with about four. I consider it almost a mental illness, frankly. But
all right. So as believers, we're left going into this election cycle with a lot of emotions on the table. It's the first time we are going to be voting for two presidential incumbents. It's the first time we have lived under two president incumbents. We know what it is to live under one and to live under the other. They have further exposed their thinking, their policies, their philosophies. And yet, I'm trying to figure out in my mind if the faith-based voter is so disgusted that they sit it out and how dangerous that is.
Yeah, well, you know, 2020, President Trump won a record number of votes. And I know it just so happened that same election, Joe Biden got even more. You know, I can debate about that, about the legitimacy of that. But I was concerned back in 2020, hey, there's a lot of people who are going to stay home. They didn't stay home. They turned out in large numbers. I think my prognostication and reading the tea leaves on that, I think people are going to turn out this fall. They're going to turn out probably greater than ever. There are some people, a friend of mine who is a pollster named Richard Barris calls them seasick voters. They're just nauseated from all of the acrimony that they're not going to vote. But we're going to see record numbers of people vote, and they're going to vote for Trump. And I can tell you, in my opinion, that the effort from the left to steal the election is going to be even bigger than 2020. So the question is going to be how successful they are.
All right. You're fascinating, Daniel. Thanks for your time. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, go to Daniel's website, DanielRStreet.com, and you can purchase the book, but you also can download the audio version there absolutely free. So thank you for making that available to us. There's a series of the fake news exposed and the fake news exposed about Trump. So there's a series on that as well. Daniel, you're fascinating. Thanks for your time. You know, let's stay connected. This whole thing in New York, I can't find one attorney, even a Trump-hating attorney, that says this thing meets the standard of a legitimate trial.
Me either. I don't know any.
Yeah.
And I talk about it more than most people do.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. Stay in the fight. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.